Copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
A long time ago, before anyone knew what was happening, Walt Disney cast a spell on the fairy tale, and he has held it captive ever since. That is just to quote a novelist called Jack Sipes, but I think it's really appropriate. He has held it captive ever since. I just wonder, do you know that it all started with a mouse? Because Walt Disney wouldn't tolerate any other view than it all started with a mouse. So when I had the privilege of visiting Burbank, making some interviews and so on, I even saw that the Mickey Mouse is present on the picket fences. You can see that. It all started with a mouse. I'd love us to dig into Plain Crazy via YouTube. Maybe the 1929 one with sound. It's really, really entertaining. Please do so. Not now, but later on, and get a feel of how it all started with the movies. In Norway, honestly, we got the Plain Crazy in the 1930s. We did. But it wasn't until the late 1940s that Mickey and the other cartoons sort of came into the homes in Norway via the magazine Donald Duck. You wouldn't believe it, maybe, but Norway is the country where Donald Duck is the most popular. So just a few weeks ago, a copy of number one from 1948 was sold for 12,000 euro. I didn't buy it. No, I didn't. But it's just to show that in different countries, different ways into the Disney universe has been opened. And in Norway, the Donald Duck was really the highway into getting to know Mickey and the other characters. But of course, it's wonderful to find quotes from other parts of the world, not Norway, like Time Magazine, 1954, saying, "Measured by his social impact, Walt Disney is one of the most influential men alive. The hand that rocks the cradle is Walt Disney's. And who can say what effect it's having on the world?" We might, for instance, want to quote Mark Pinsky, who says, "Disney has created a world of fantasy." That's actually what you said, Vesa. "A world of fantasy that both entertains and educates children in this country, that is, US, and around the world." He said so in 2004. So a lot had happened from 1954, where we quoted Time Magazine, and 2004. And after 2004, it has grown vividly as a global entity. First and foremost, via the Disney Junior. And you still see Mickey Mouse up there, don't you? It all started with a mouse. It was a pilot in 2011, and then in 2012 it was all over, so to speak. That is, in 2015 there are 34 Disney channels in 25 languages around the world. And when I... Oh, this is really too bad. Could we have the light off just here, please? But if you have imagination quite similar to the one we get from Disney, you see that there is a poster there. And that poster I saw in Katowice on Friday, on arrival, pointing towards the Disney Channel in Poland. But anyway, you know it's all over. It's just nice to have a reminder. It's even in our neighborhood here when we are at ELF. This is just to show and back up what I'm saying. So I don't think that you wouldn't trust me, but still, it's quite something. It's global. And ELF is European, but still, especially this year, with the Sri Lanka being present every morning for the Bible studies, we see that we are part of a global world. It's Europe, it's the global world. And of course, tonight, when Michael Oh will give a speech to us, the Lausanne GenSec, we get that reminder as well. And Disney goes global. And they're all magical stories. This, us kids love them. You love them. The people back home in our neighborhood love them. The kids in church love them. And I just want us to listen carefully whenever we dig into a story from the Disney to figure out what will we actually embrace here as good values to build on and really connect to them when proclaiming the gospel. And what do we have the guts to challenge? Say, sorry, there is something here that doesn't correspond to the gospel. The thing is, when I had the privilege of spending some time at Biola University in Los Angeles, I taught some classes, and I showed some clips. Sorry that we had more time, so I showed a couple of clips. And it astonished me. Brilliant students, 22 plus, they had never, ever talked about why they sort of identified with certain characters in the movies, cartoons and so on from Disney, and what it was they actually learned from it. So I think there is sort of a blind spot in a way concerning the triangle of children, worldviews, and the popular culture, the stories that surround us. So I'm so glad that the blind spot is gradually getting smaller and we can help each other. And of course, it's more important now than ever that we do this because the stories are more than they ever used to be and they are so different. But we are in the Disney universe and that is big enough not to think of all the other stories that surround the kids and the youth. But all stories actually teach. Whether the storyteller intends them to or not, they teach the world we create, they teach the morality we live by, they teach it much more effectively than moral precepts and instructions. Well, that is not my words, but I fully agree with Philip Pullman. You may have read his Dark Materials, you may have watched The Golden Compass, you may know that he is a brilliant writer, you may know that he lives in Oxford and he has a goal for his life, becoming more popular than C.S. Lewis, rule him out and proclaim the atheistic worldview in different ways through his writing. Especially if you come from England, you know a lot about this. But he is a brilliant writer, and he's so right in what he is saying. And I just wondered, what about the people writing the scripts for Disney? Well, when you take on a Disney animated feature, you know you're going to be affected entire generations of human minds. Okay? From my experience, after having interviewed quite a few, I realized, yes, they are aware of that, the power of the story and the power of the Disney. But I'm not that sure whether they know in what way they carry out this tool of writing a story, in what way they are actually affecting minds all over the world. But they know that they are actually doing it. And I just wonder, in our ministry, in our homes, in our churches, in our outreach in different ways, for instance, Beauty and the Beast, have you ever thought of relating to that when we talk about how we easily judge each other just from what we look like? That is a wonderful way of affirming a value in the Beauty and the Beast. And I won't go further into that now, but that's just a small example. Or Lion King. A lot of the boys at Biola said Simba. Okay, but that's okay. Simba or Scar. But when I challenged them a bit about Simba and whether they had realized that what did it take for Simba to grow up? Yeah, they had never thought about that. Was there something about taking on responsibility? Oh, yeah. So obviously, none in their church or their home had ever talked to them about Lion King from that perspective. He took on responsibility as a way of growing. And there are lots of other things that we can affirm. But of course, circle of life, isn't that a challenge there? John, the whole setup of the song, and we know that the song goes with us long after the movie is over or the musical is over. Circle of life, okay, how do we interpret that? And what about this Hakuna Matata, Hakuna Matata? I just asked my nephew, age 11, when in Lion King is it that Simba is really singing this song? And he's quite clever, this nephew of mine. He said, well, that was when he was out there and he hadn't grown up yet, you know, auntie. I think my husband had talked to him before, because I don't see how he could answer me like that. Because that is exactly it. The carefree life before he grew up. And I just wonder, in these days that are so marked by, ooh, I want to be happy, I want to live a carefree life as long as possible, how many do actually realize that Hakuna Matata is in a certain stage in life? It's not the whole life. Simba grew up, you know? Well, that's just some illustrations of doing what John Stott encouraged us to do. Listening to the Word. Oh, I left my Bible in the bag, but okay, I have the Bible here. You can envision that. Have the Word in one hand, the unchangeable Word, and then the changeable world in the other, and try to bridge the two by affirming all that is true, good, worth listening to, and challenging all that is not in line with the biblical worldview. And when we are eager to dig into the context of the younger generation when it comes to the most important part of their life, growing up, having their worldview, and we want to rise them in the Christian faith, let Jesus become bigger and bigger and bigger for them. Just as we have this wonderful scene in The Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe when Lucy meets Aslan again. Remember? And Lucy, oh, you have grown, Aslan, you have grown. No, I haven't. Oh, you have? No. But when you grow year by year, I grow larger to you. I become bigger for you. And that is what we want for our kids. And as they grow, and as their Christian faith is being challenged, they realize that Jesus becomes more and more important for them. He grows to be bigger. You see what I mean by that? And in order to be of help for the younger generation, we need to build that bridge and be true to the Word and build a bridge to the world. And again, Beauty and the Beast and Lion King. And now you know why I have the Bible stories for kids there. Because what I pointed at when we last talked about the Beauty and the Beast and Lion King is actually when we open the Bible, when we tell stories from the Bible, how do we make sure, well, we can't make sure of it, but we will do as much as we can to help them realize that these stories are rooted in reality. They are true. They are true because they are from the Bible. Well, wasn't last night wonderful? No wonder that they needed a couple of chairs in there because he is giving an afternoon worship. I'm telling you now because you can't rush now. Anyway. But we want to help the young ones to trust the Bible the early childhood, and to help them realize that all these wonderful stories in the Disney universe, with all these values that we want to affirm, they are still fiction, whereas we can trust that what the Bible tells us is really the truth. Back home, I work quite a bit with Damaris Norway, trying to build that bridge between the word and the world, trying to develop certain resources for youth workers in their daily work. So, for instance, the confirmation classes, I say, when you are teaching about Jesus, you better know what Lady Gaga or Life of P or other top artists, movies in the time say about faith and Jesus. So that when the confirmation class are there in the classroom or out in the schoolyard or in the club and listening to all these other stories of who Jesus is and where we should put our trust, find meaning, then they know that actually Jesus is the truth, the Son of God. And when Lady Gaga stays there up front on a stage in Norway even, praying to Jesus, thanking Jesus for being there before her, but now it's all about me, Jesus. So there is something there. In the midst of other things that we can actually affirm in what Lady Gaga is saying, it's not all falsehood, but regarding this Jesus, it's undoubtedly falsehood only. Anyway, for ages I have prayed for and hoped for some well-known sociologists back home in Scandinavia to say this. And at last year it happened. Religion, without question, the media plays an important role when it comes to religious socialization in our culture. It always helps when these well-known people grasp what we at a tiny little campus at a university college in Norway have been trying to work on for ages. It helps. You may know Ted from Czechia. He has been here many times. Popular culture gives us a scripts or templates that model the way life is or should be. And we use that scripts as part of a title in a book to help teachers in youth clubs back home in Norway. Script is manus in Norwegian. Manus for livet means a script for your life. What does the film tell you, and what about the Bible? Bringing the bridge. But what about Walt Disney, our sort of hero, Walt Disney? We like to have a point of view in our stories, not an obvious moral, but a worthwhile theme. Okay, the script. We want to have a worthwhile theme. And the important thing is to teach a child that good can always triumph over evil, and that is what our pictures attempts to do. At ELF, we hear the word worldview ever so often during a day, and we may have different ways of explaining what a worldview is all about, but the core understanding for all of us, I'm sure that is the same. And I also want us to have the same sort of platform when it comes to when does actually a child, a youth, have an awareness of their own worldview. Some say at the age of 6, and I'm sure that a lot of the main foundation is already there by the age of 6. But the Bonner Group, after quite a survey, says that, okay, by the age of 13, it's sort of in place, and it'll be refined through experience during the teen and adult years. And if you have been to the Youth Ministry Network or to workshop with Dave Patty, you know his scheme of what's actually happening in the certain stages from childhood and up to the early 20s, which is very much in line with Piaget and Collins and these well-known educationalists. And he also says that there is a vital stage around 13. So at least we know that worldview formation takes place not in a vacuum, but related to stories that surround us, the biblical stories, but also all these other stories. And we better be more aware of what's going on as key themes, key values in the dominant stories in our culture. I sort of like James Sire's way of explaining a worldview, because it helps me realizing that, yes, I can explain my worldview as a story as well as a set of presuppositions, and that it affects my whole living. It's just as if we are quoting Paul, who quoted a philosopher saying, "It's in whom we live and move and have our being," which help us realizing that it's impossible not having a worldview, as well as it's impossible writing a story without leaving some traces of a worldview there, whether you intend to or not. And also, if you have been with Dave Petty for some time, this ELF, you will say that, yeah, what David Howell says here is really in correspondence with what Dave Petty says, that you start with yourself when your worldview is being formed. But friends is ever so important. So we could just have stopped here and we could have moved into the Disney universe and look at friendship. But the reason for me having it here is just to give a pointer to the fact that we should listen into what are the popular stories in the culture of the children you minister, the kids and the youth. Because they will listen to the stories and watch the stories that their friends listen and watch. And that is so important to them. In the Disney.no, at a day just a few weeks ago, all these images were there. And you could have gone into Disney.pl, Poland, or whatever, and you had found most of the same one, I'm quite sure. And they are all magical. Magic takes you away and shows you a better life, and then it allows you to apply it to your real life. That's Pinocchio. That is Scar, in a way. Simba. You know, you go into that story and then you go back to your own life story. And Disney uses magic as the unexpected device to intervene and resolve plot problems or conflicts. And of course, we could have spent a lot of time just on how the story is being carried out and the plot and all of that. That's not for us to do, but we know magic is the key thing. We could also have gone to Norway to show how Frozen was actually shot, well, certain scenes, at least, in Norway. We won't do that, but I'm very proud, because everyone wanted to talk to me about Frozen when I came to Hollywood. It sounds as if I'm being there forever, but I had some days in Burbank, and when they realized I was from Norway, oh, guess what, it was fantastic when we came to Balestrand, is that how you pronounce it, the scenery, and we all could master that and then Disneyfy it. And that's a key word, Disneyfication. They Disneyfied what they found in the folk tale from Denmark and the surroundings in Norway. That is a hallmark of what Disney is doing. But what about this? Anyone who can give us the text of Let It Go? Do you remember the text? What is the key message in the song, Let It Go, Let It Go? It's time to see what I can do to test the limits and break through. No right, no wrong, no rules for me. I'm free. Let it go, let it go. Of course, how many of you have watched Frozen? So when we move into the movie, into the storyline, we get another impression of what this is all about, because we saw some consequences of just breaking free. But how often is it that a child, a youngster, me in the mid-50s, think of the storyline when I find myself humming and singing a song from a well-known movie? It's just the text in the song. I don't contextualize it. So, a daughter of one of the professors at Biola told me, guess what? You know, I'm a theologian. I'm a professor at Biola. And my daughter had been to Frozen, and when she sat back home, I was helping her with her homework, and she was to learn how to write in a, you know, more stylish way. I asked her, could you please make sure how you hold your pen? Guess what? She immediately started singing, let it go, let it go. I'm having my own rules. He said, what? I hadn't realized. But of course, he sat down with her and talked it over and helped her realizing that if she just followed her own rules, that would end in disaster. But if we just have this small glimpse and relates to our world, where we have so many stories giving us the input, you are your own boss. Decide for yourself. Be true to your own heart. Try to figure out what's right to do for you. Just let it go. Then, this particular lyric from the Frozen movie gives us quite a challenge, but at the same time, quite an opportunity to talk these wonderful, important things over. Yes, they know that they are actually affecting minds all over the globe forever. You get a mainline into the hearts and minds of children, so you have to be careful with that. He is also the director of the film The Golden Compass, Chris Weitz. You have to be careful about that. I think they are pretty careful. And Disney is known to be quite safe in the eyes of parents because there are not that much of nudity and violence and swearing and sex. So they sort of feel that, and now I'm talking not of Pixar and the others, but the traditional Disney. So they're quite safe, but at the same time, there are certain things that we should be aware of. And we know they are global. We know that Walt Disney was very much alert to, yes, I have a multicultural audience. So already in 1937-38, when Snow White came out, the first feature, they had four different languages that it was dubbed into. And Pinocchio, your favorite, seven different languages, and we are in 1940, even Hindi and Arabic. So go global, that was his mission. So then, we were in US, weren't we? The choice was made to keep these films accessible and relevant to children both from inside and outside the Judeo-Christian tradition. No wonder that we find traces of different worldviews here. Cinderella, did you watch Cinderella in March or later on? Or is Cinderella to you the 1950 or some later editions, but the 1950 story? Maybe. I had the privilege of being in LA with some relatives on the 13th of March. These relatives of mine were quite new to me, but you get so close because they had the same surname, Serigstad, at me. And I invited them to go with me to Cinderella. And we talked. We actually sat down and talked about Cinderella afterwards. They had never done so before. And they are not very special. They are quite normal. Very seldom, I find, people are used to talk about movies when they have watched a movie. I think we should do that. So we agreed that it's not just entertainment. It's more than surface. There's actually something in the middle. We realized that there is a message there. And deep down, we actually found traces of worldviews. So I used, just in a very simple way, this tool of analyzing films from a worldview perspective when talking to my relatives about Cinderella. You just figure out what's being said and done here. And that gives you some hints of values, view of what it's like being human, reality, and where you put your trust. It's just like an iceberg. It's so easy. I tried it out on Dawson's Creek when I had first developed it. It worked perfectly. And now it's actually being used in different universities in Norway because people have gradually realized nothing is neutral. No story is neutral. So, key ethical values in Cinderella: have courage and be kind. That's a major message. That was the same in 1950. But in 1950, that wasn't a countercultural message. But that is so today, isn't it? A countercultural message: just be kind to others. Don't think of yourself in the first place. These virtues. Just because it's being done doesn't mean it is right. How often do you hear that spoken out openly in a popular movie or television soap for youth or kids? Not very often. You have it here. You have humanity. Everyone is valuable and should be respected. No one should be degraded. You see that, very true to the 1950 story. Forgiveness is actually a possibility, and mutual love and respect between Cinderella and the prince is wonderfully laid out for us. Mutual. View of reality. I'm going quick here because we will see other things afterwards. Good and evil are clear opposites. Something is actually good, something is evil. And magic is an integrated part of reality. I'll come back to this good and evil because it's not black and white as it was in 1950. Now we actually get to know that the stepmother, she is a normal human being. We get to know some of the reasons why she acted as she acted. It doesn't mean that it justifies the evil. It doesn't justify her, what she did, but sort of explaining. And that gives you and me a much better way into talking about what it's like being human. And me too have some things in me that would, you know, I would take out in a wrong way on others. You see? But have faith. Wow. That's one of the key things in the Disney universe, way back to when it all started. Have faith. And I heard in another session today, actually, in America, if you run for presidency, you have to proclaim that you have faith. Whatever you have faith in, that doesn't matter, as long as you have faith. Have faith. I believe in everything, Ella's mother says. Okay, is that sort of an echo of the typical tendency in U.S., not just U.S., it's okay to believe in whatever in Europe as well, as long as you don't say that the truth is to be found where you have put your trust and where you have your faith. So I just thought, okay, it was created in the Judeo-Christian context, like all the classics. Many of these classics are endurance stories. And the key values that we can confirm is actually fruits without the roots. Remember, these stories were made for an audience that was multicultural and global, from the very first Snow White even. So, no roots, but we see the fruits ever so often from the Judeo-Christian worldview. So the key values in Cinderella are sort of countercultural, which gives us great opportunities for conversations. So when you next time watch Cinderella and show some clips to smaller young kids or youth, you can have wonderful opportunities for conversations. But I agree with Tony Campolo when saying, I'm not so sure that Disney creates the values as much as it reinforces values that are already operative in American society. And I say American society because that's what he is saying, and that is where Disney is actually, you know, creating his stories. But it's global. And we see the same values in Europe as it's over there. And I ever so often to my students quote William Romanowski, saying that popular culture sort of reflects the society it helps to create. So, in these different stories from Disney, and we use his movies as a listening post, we could have been in different arenas in the universe, we find mixed moral messages. The kids you're working with, and when I say kids, I mean youth, because you're in youth work, they have all these stories telling them, follow your heart, decide for yourself. And also in the Disney universe, if we look at the film from 1989 onwards, we find all these tensions. So we have both and. So we enjoy watching them, we affirm all that can be affirmed, but we shouldn't be, you know, trapped by it. Lion King, okay, as we said, Simba had to accept responsibility. Fantastic. Pocahontas, wonderful. This case for equality of different people, races, as well as for environmentalism. We'll really embrace these values, won't we? The Hunchback of Notre Dame argues for the humanity of all people, including the outcast and the marginalized. In Hercules, encourages self-sacrifice as the defining quality of heroism. And Mulan exemplifies qualities of duty, honor, and courage in a woman. Anything here you wouldn't embrace? Could we have the Bible open and say, yeah, well, yeah. So I hope you realize that I'm not searching for hidden messages in Disney. I'm actually listening to what's being said, watching what's being done, and knowing that there are no such thing as a neutral story, which means that there are traces of worldviews here, and there are values that I will confirm and that I will challenge. So who am I? Well, a lot of tensions to answering this question. All people are valued? Oh no, only lively, fun people are valued. What is inside is important? Oh no, physical beauty is important. We find both these views in different films and in the same film. Females can be strong and self-sufficient, but they are only truly happy when they have a man. The heart's desire for a woman is to find oneself through love. But for a man, you first find yourself and then you find love. And finally, females can be leaders, but male leadership ought to be the norm. Would you like to dig deeper into Disney after this? I hope you will. I hope this is an encouragement, not the opposite. The tensions, these powerful stories, there are tensions there. But still, I can't let you have anything to say until I have got this through to you, because it's so important. Wish fulfillment is really a key theme in so many of Disney movies. My dreams, my will, be true to yourself, follow your heart, you deserve to be happy. And that really, really, really is there. And when you move to the next step, talking about reality, you see, it's not a secular universe because you choose magic over religion. Something is good, something is evil. Black and white, yeah, in the earlier ones, very much so, black and white. But now, as I said in Cinderella, the stepmother from the 1950 was really, you just saw her as purely black, evil. Now we get to understand why she acted as she did. It's not justifying the evil, but explaining. And the evil fairy tale in Sleeping Beauty compared to the movie Maleficent, quite different. how the evil fairy is being portrayed in Maleficent. So, not that black and white, easier for us to actually find something to confirm and talk about the Christian view of what it's like being human. View of faith? Faith I have in myself, in humanity, in the worthwhileness of the pursuits and entertainment for the masses. Quote from Walt Disney at an early age. Isn't that sort of echoing a lot of people today as well? You really have faith in humanity, or isn't it? I sort of feel that a lot of people are depressed. They don't have faith in that we can actually make a change any longer. We have both and. But Disney really clings to, I have faith in humanity, I have faith in future. But he didn't want to single out any one religion. But still he used these theological vocabulary, didn't he? Faith, believe, miracle, blessing, sacrifice, divine. And that tells me that I have to be very much aware when I hear these, to me, well-known phrases, to you, well-known phrases, to figure out what's actually meant here. Have faith doesn't mean believe in God. A blessing doesn't mean it's God's blessing. So we know that, of course we do. In our postmodern world, we sort of can decide for ourselves what's meant by the words we use. We have to listen carefully to the context where these words are put in the films, in the stories, and figure out what's actually being communicated here. Will Herberg says that American religion is actually faith in faith, the magic of believing. As I said, you can't run for presidency in US if you don't have faith in something. I can't deny that this is actually said about America, but really, we find it in many places in the world. Have faith in something. And of course, the hallmark of a great story is this redemption, transformation, and restoration. And if we go to Cinderella, have courage, and you can be restored. It's fantastic. Back to Walt Disney saying, the good can always triumph over evil. Have courage. One day, you will actually realize that you can live happily ever after because you have the capacity to overcome problems. You get into the story and you learn. You learn from Pinocchio in one way or another. So the good heroes we identify with and we learn how to overcome a problem. But still, there is magic intervening in the Disney universe. You can't make it totally on your own. There is a hint of magic. So there is something for us as Christians there. Walt Disney said, someday I'll create happiness for today and hope for tomorrow. And he had this as a mission, to bring happiness to millions. Happiness, when he first started playing crazy. Happiness in 2015. Happiness in the Tomorrowland, a world beyond, that dips into the Tomorrowland as part of the Disneyland in Los Angeles. Happiness. Have faith. Humanity will conquer. Very counter-cultural, this last movie from the Disney. It taps into Disney's mission, bring happiness and faith in humanity, faith in tomorrow. But I have a lot to say about that that I can't say here. I quoted Mark Pinsky without having the second sentence there. Disney has created a world of fantasy based on a set of shared American beliefs, he says, that both entertains and educates children in this country and around the world. And honestly, whether they are American beliefs or not, they are values that we can affirm quite a few of, but also challenge. And if you go away from the movies and into the theme parks and think of the toys and the clothing, the music, you see that it all boils down to this imagination, the fantasy, the happiness. Leave today, enter the world of yesterday and tomorrow and fantasy, because Disneyland is the happiest place on earth. And Walt Disney wanted to make these stories as something that we could enter in order to create happiness for ourselves and learn how to overcome problems so that real happiness could be pursued. But religion is not there to that extent. But what I realize when I dig into quite a few of the newer films is that there is a mixture, not just in moral, but a mixture of different worldviews. And more of the more New Age-inspired pantheism, but it all boils down to the relativistic view. You choose for yourself. There isn't one true religion, one true worldview, but you choose relativism. And you choose what is good for you. Follow your heart. You choose from your individual perspective what you find is right for you. And that gives us quite a bit of thought, food for our thought, for the family context, for the church context, and for our own life just at home, really. Whether we have kids or not. I say family, and then I think if we have kids, but just on a personal basis, I think it's quite challenging, as well as giving us lots of opportunity.